I'm a resource that's truly green, renewable, a wondrous scene. I captured carbon, a silent giver, while serving forests as a whole river. From me, textiles and packaging emerge. In tall wood buildings, I take the verge. Guess, what am I? So versatile and good. A material cherished, oh yes, I'm wood. This poem was generated using ChatGPT and recorded using Speechify.
Welcome back to Branching Out, the Forest Podcast, where we connect forests, science, and people. Brought to you by the International Union of Forest Research Organizations, IUFRO. Let's discover the role of forests and trees for people and nature, while we unravel complex forest topics and keep you up to date with forest research. It's the third episode already. We have covered general information about the IUFRO World Congress 2024 in Estopol and the first subtopic, strengthening forest resilience and adaptation. Today is the turn for responsible forest bioeconomy. Stick around to learn how forest bioeconomy plays a crucial role in carbon sequestration, mitigation of climate change, job creation, and rural development. I'm José Bolaños from IUFRO, and today with me is our co-host Ida Balling from the Swedish Agricultural University, SLU. Welcome, Ida.
Hi, thanks for having me, Jose. Glad to be here for this super interesting episode about the bioeconomy. A while ago, I was part of a collaboration project for FAO where we actually studied the social dimensions of a forest-based bioeconomy in Europe. And it is great to return to the topic in the format of a podcast. In the PERFORM project, I had a great pleasure to collaborate with our first guest for today, Professor Anna Toppinen from the University of Helsinki. She is a Congress keynote speaker for the theme Towards a Responsible Forest Bioeconomy, and she is here to put us in context. Let's start from the beginning. What is forest bioeconomy?
Okay, there are naturally very many different types of definitions, and a sort of narrow one would be that it's about transforming a variety of forest ecosystem services into biomaterials and production of bioenergy. Myself, I rather like relying more into the concept of circular forest bioeconomy, which is emphasizing transformation from a fossil fuel dependent economy towards more circular and bio-based economy. So it's about processes in which virgin and recycled bio-based forest resources are utilized more efficiently and hopefully in also a balanced way in these industrial processes to create value to society. And in order to claim to be responsible, of course, the demand for wood in production, it needs to be done within the ecological ecosystem boundaries.
Forest bioeconomy extends beyond traditional wood products. Could you give us some examples of innovative and maybe surprising uses of forest resources?
There are many of those, of course. One example comes to my mind coming from my own country, Finland. It's called a wood cast. I don't know if you have heard about it. It's a medical cast made from wood chips and a biodegradable plastics. Another one, I think, is simply, I mean, these really new, beautiful architectural designs of flagship buildings made of wood or libraries or school facilities made of wood. I think you see these popping up in many countries these days. So I think this is really something beautiful that's changing. And third example that comes to mind, I think not too many days ago, I just saw a picture of paperboard bottle introduced for a famous Swedish vodka brand. So, I mean, it's happening in most innovative places. One never knows if these take off or they go mainstream, but there are lots of activities ongoing for sure.
And what is needed, as you mentioned, to ensure a responsible use of these forest resources, also in the face of climate change?
Well, climate change is maybe only one of those big drivers. We also recognize biodiversity loss and limitations in using the natural resources in the face of growing population. So from industrial perspective, this calls for, of course, developing new products, genuinely new products also to serve the needs of the people. But I would say that responsibility is also related to the meeting of the people's demands. So these have also fundamentally changed. You don't see a thriving newspaper industry anymore or copy paper much used in offices or education facilities. So it's about meeting the needs that are really crucial for people. And also it's about dividing the profits, the revenues of these value creation processes in hopefully more equal and just manner. And like in the previous episode in the series, I think you were discussing resilience of forest systems. So I see also resilience of forest industrial system as a core element to produce responsibly goods and services. So that happens or should happen in resilient communities, helping adapt to economic, political or geopolitical shocks. So as a means of diversification of livelihoods is very important also here.
Are we moving into the right direction? Do you see forest-based industries and societies worldwide move towards a low-carbon circular bioeconomy?
I like to think positively that, yeah, there's signs that we are moving into the right direction. But the second question is the change rapid enough in the light of all these challenges for having resilient forests and resilient forest value chains? I would say that there has been a lot of hype around new forest-based products, for example, to pharmaceutical industry to substitute chemicals or concrete or steel in urban construction solutions. However, in reality, at the moment, the market shares of these new products are still pretty low. So the question is, I think this is a very important question, how to accelerate this change towards having more of these new products. In business research community, we talk with a concept called incumbent inertia. So the big multinational pulp and biomaterial companies, they are still getting the main revenue from these traditional, quite price-sensitive commodity products like pulp or paperboard. This may have an impact on how hard there is a push for genuinely striving for new products or focusing the business into recycling and reusing materials instead of putting focus on short-term and single-use products. So I think as societies and us as consumers, we should do a little bit more effort, definitely.
Thank you. Back to you, Jose, and more interesting examples from Kenya.
Thanks, both of you, Anne and Ida. It's important to note that the examples may vary between different regions due to the diverse forest ecosystems, socioeconomic conditions, and policy frameworks in the different countries. And we will have examples from Africa, Latin America, and Asia. But before we go into that, because this is really connected, when we talk about forest bioeconomy, we normally talk about another concept, which is non-timber forest products. And our guest over here is we use this term many times. So these are things that are not necessarily wood. So it could be nuts, it could be some other byproducts that are collected from the forest. And these non-timber forest products can actually impact the rural livelihoods. We are happy to welcome our next guest from the Kenyan Forest Research Institute and host of the World Congress in 2029. Welcome Nelly Odoo, Director of the Forest Product Research Program, an expert in the field of biomass energy in the region. And she will provide some interesting examples, as you just said, Ida. Can you go ahead and provide us with information about the forest bioeconomy in Kenya?
Thank you so much for this chance to have this short podcast talking about forest bioeconomy, forest products. We look forward, yes, indeed, definitely, as KEFRI is looking forward to hosting the AIFRO 2029. Definitely, this is a region to look at. So some of the products that I can think of, because as a country, we are heavily dependent on biomass energy for not just domestic use, but for heating. And I've also seen that even for industrial use, the tea industry uses biomass energy, the fuel wood, for treating their tea. And also for processing vegetable oil for cooking, they also are using now biomass energy. And this is now contributing a lot of stress on the environment. So that's one of the things that we are using the forest products, especially in the biomass energy sector. And it's a huge percentage, over 70%, you know, of our trees go into all these particular sectors that I've mentioned. Yes, actually, it goes almost to 90% if you go to the rural areas. People are still using firewood and charcoal for cooking and heating. It's really highly dependent. In the urban areas, it could be now close to 80%, but we are trying to reduce that with other renewable energy items that we can be able to process.
And do you know more examples from the region? Have you seen any positive outcomes from these initiatives?
We look at products that we can add value. Adding value is like the indigenous fruits. We're looking at medicinal plants. And this will cause now the farmers to maintain these trees on farm because we are targeting to increase our tree cover on the land. When we get farmers to plant and to also maintain the tree species that they have, the indigenous fruit trees, like the tamarinds, the baobab. So what we do is that because these are fruits that are in season, seasonally, So when the farmers sell them, we tell them, okay, can you value add? Then that way you can not only just sell it as a raw product, but we are able to now actually, you can have now economy just at your place as much as instead of selling it as a raw product. So I have got examples like the baobab fruit that is indigenous in Africa and in Kenya, in much of part of the eastern part of the country. These are huge trees. And for a long time, some of the farmers were removing them from the land because they occupy a lot of space. But this specific fruit has one of the highest sources of vitamin C. In fact, it became so valuable, especially the powder, because it has seed and it's encased in a powder. These formed areas where we've got entrepreneurs, where we introduced them to farmer groups, that they could now be able to have that arrangement with the farmers, that they could be able to collect the fruit when it's in season, they would keep it in store, they would process it if it's not drying it, and then the entrepreneur, if they are not processing it on site, they would take it where they can be able to process it, get the powder, and then the seed oil, once they've gotten the seed would be pressed, and it's a highly valuable seed. The baobab oil is one of the expensive seed oils that we have that is used as a carrier for perfumery and also for cosmetics. So this also has formed industries, micro industries, and we've encouraged farmers actually to maintain these trees on farm. And not only have we been able to incubate even one of the entrepreneurs, this was over 6 years ago at Kefri. Now so many other entrepreneurs have come in and, you know, their creativity in trying to get the products and vary the products from the oil that is collected is enormous. The tamarind as well, we've had entrepreneurs who've been able to collect this fruit because we've had marketers and middlemen who are able to collect this fruit and be able to export it the way it is. But then now when we've encouraged now farmer groups and enterprises who we've been able to connect them with the Micro Small Enterprise Authority in Kenya, where they've been able to be housed at county level buildings. And they've been able to process this further to make jams, fruit jams and fruit juices, which are now being found in the supermarkets.
And though, strictly speaking, bamboo is grass, with the 2022 national policy, Kenya is committed to using bamboo to contribute to the forest cover, watershed development and carbon sequestration. What can you tell us about that?
That is now the next stage that the government is pushing. So bamboo has a huge target, as well as other fruit trees and as well as timber products, and to maintain and try and get the target of 30% tree cover. So right now we have a number of handicrafts and enterprises that are processing bamboo in the country. And we have a project that's funded by the International Bamboo and Rattan Organization based in China. They're implementing this project in the region, in Ethiopia, Uganda, and Kenya. So we're having now a regional kind of outlook in trying to raise this particular plant to address livelihood provision, to address climate change interventions in terms of mitigation, as well as making it an industrial product.
Thanks a lot, Nelly. And we now move to Chile with Ida.
Yes, next on our list is Veronica Leve Munoz from the Chilean Forestry Institute, who is part of a UFORS task force unlocking the bioeconomy and non-timber forest product. Welcome. What are some notable examples of forest bioeconomy activities in Latin America?
We have several interesting non-timber forest products coming from Latin America. You know, Brazil has a huge, interesting, varied basket of different species that produce really interesting products. There we have, for example, açaí, which is one very well known. It's a fruit of a tree, very tasty, by the way. And it was initially and is still harvested from native areas, but most of it now comes from plantations. So there has been a domestication of the species, from which over 1.6 million tons were exported last year, generating an income of over $800,000. Other one from the Amazon area, not only, but most, also from Brazil, is Brazil and the Amazon area, including Peru and Bolivia too, is the Brazil nut that in 2021, over 45,000 tons were exported from shelled nuts. It's also a very interesting product that generates income and great jobs also for local people, for rural, marginalized populations.
It's a very tasty nut. It's very important nutritionally because it has a very different chemical content, including a high amount of selenium, which is very good for aging people, for the brain function. In Chile, coming to my home country, we have an increasing exploitation of NTFPs that include shrubs, trees. For example, we have rose hip, the pom-pom musk, which is Spangum magellanicum. It's a musk that grows very slowly in very humid areas. When it comes dry, it can grow in volume like 100 times. So it's used for example, for pollution control, for oil recollection in sea or in waters, as mulch, as substrate for plant production, for gardens in decorative mulches. Then several from trees, Quillaja saponaria, that produces saponine that is used even for vaccines. Then, for example, Peumus boldus, that produces the boldine, that is quite used in Germany for herbal teas, but has a very digestive positive effect. Fungi, several fungi, suius, luteus, morchellas, lactarius, others.
And we have also read about the Chilean hazelnut, the maki berry, and you work with a stone pine production. So what impact have these examples in the communities?
That's one of the challenges. Normally, the populations involved in the harvesting include high percentage of women and families. And usually, they have a low educational level, are poor marginalized people with few resources, no capital or very little capital, no formal organization. So they have no access to the information, mostly on prices. And so are part of this very unbalanced productive chain in which the most of the income goes to the middleman or the final traders and stakeholders. There are huge benefits economically. So you generate income, socially you generate jobs and also recreation, very interesting, land settings. And environmentally, there is this carbon sequestration, erosion control, and other benefits. So you contribute to the poverty reduction. It's one of the SDGs relevant to the sustainable management, to the health of the planet at the end, because you are sequestering carbon, regulating the water cycles and so on. And then the equality, trying to balance the economic development, including marginalized populations from poor areas, for example. And so you can contribute really to a more stable country development, because when you have a higher level for the population, you will have a more stable, social. Also, we will have less problems, riots, which are very common these days.
Thanks.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Back to Jose.
We want to know more examples. That's why we invited Professor Jinglong Liu, Director of the Centers for Forest, Environmental and Resources Policy Study of the Renmin University of China. In the context of forest bioeconomy, I understand you have studied the historical development of the non-timber forest products in China. Could you please give us a short summary, say from the Xia dynasty until today? What are some specific examples of products?
Thank you, Hussein. Bioeconomy, in particular, non-timber forest products are of great importance to the people's livelihood through economy, culture, heritage, community development, and the forest biodiverse conservation. And the importance actually varies greatly among the regions, China is a big country producing non-timber forest products. We have rich and diverse experience using forest gathering products other than wood. In Northeast China, where temperate continental forests dominate, with similarity to forests, with Canada, Northern Europeans, the rich of wild mushroom, and all kinds of nuts. In the Southwest China, close to Myanmar, close to India, very mountainous region, many minorities there, with colorful forests related to cultures. well known biodiversity hotspots are famous for all kinds of mushroom, medicine herb, and forest-related food and industrial biomaterials like, you know, bamboo shoots or the resin. Since Xia Dynasty, you know, as you say, that up to the 4,000 years ago, China has started to cultivate mulberry and raising silkworm. Religious land, the Fengshui forests in China also reflect rich spiritual, you know, and the cultural connotation. And the trees in China originally associated the burial place, cemeteries. It's hard to talk about in particular typical products, kind of bioeconomic products related to the traditional forest-related knowledge. But I would like to cite two products. One is medicine herb, one is town oil, as an example.
So we have covered already the traditional knowledge stage. And what about after the forest tenure reform in 2003?
We not just use forest as a timber, but use a forest, you know, the space, under forest space. So we call underplanting, under, you know, the forest, with forest. I categorize it as four types, underplanting products, underplanting domestic animal raising, under forest collection and processing, under forest products, and forest landscape. The forest landscape we use is actually it's a tourism, not ecotourism. Now, actually, the concept of the ecological products has been accepted by the local authority in China.
And what are some of the social and economic impacts of the production of these products? What are some of the challenges and prospects of the development of this non-timber forest product?
So non-timber forest products, you know, without enough policy regulation, may exceed the restoration capacity of it and cause damage to existing resulting environment problems. Over the past 100 years, China society has gone through two different periods of planned economy and market economy. Market economy and influenced by the globalization act opened up in 1980s. In recent years, China policy player maker pay more and more attention to the role of forest environment management. In China, non-timber forest products are no longer just commodity. Their development of this product has been treated as a strategy or the policy to protect forest resources and advance the growth of the rural communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Yinlon. So Ida, what's new for you today? I, for instance, will be using the concept of incumbent inertia from now on.
that's a good one. It is amazing to hear how diverse products and uses the forest provide to people in different parts of the world. It is also very promising for me to hear how value-adding activities help local economies and provide livelihoods in rural areas. For me, personally, it will be interesting to see or even investigate what effects these new value chains have on equity and who is profiting in the end. And then I got really hungry actually from hearing about all the tasty foods. Acai and mushrooms are some of my favorite foods.
That's a very interesting coincidence. Thank you very much, Ida, for co-hosting today. And thanks to our guests and to you, our listener. Listen to Branching Out wherever you listen podcasts, rate and review us. And next time, we will be exploring the topic of forest biodiversity and ecosystem services. And check out more content from iufro at iufro.org or click on the link in the show notes. Thank you. Bye-bye.